Something, someone is mutilating animals around this planet. What are they? Who are they? In a moment, the crypto hunter John Rhodes joins us on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we've got a fascinating night for you tonight. John Rhodes, also known as the Crypto Hunter, is America's most outspoken, controversial UFO researcher. He is known around the world for his pioneering work researching reports of reptilian humanoid contacts and his out-of-the-box perspective regarding UFOs, alien encounters, the hollow earth, secret government technologies, and subsurface facilities. John has been a featured speaker at national and international UFO conferences, and his research discoveries have served as platforms for the beliefs of many other notable UFO conspiracy speakers and authors. He also acts as a professional consultant for literary and broadcast industry projects dealing with UFO-related subjects. He is our guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Hey, John, welcome back. How are you?
Good evening, George. How are you?
Good. Always a pleasure to have you. Great subject matter tonight, especially on the heels of something that Linda Moulton Howe reported on us for us a week ago about animal mutilations. But let's talk with you a little bit, if we can, John, about just what you've been doing since you were last on with me.
Since I've been last on with you, I've been concentrating my investigative efforts up here in the western Montana area, as well as maintaining the point of contact for people across the world who claim to have had contacts or at least sightings of these half-human, half-reptilian beings that have been reported throughout the years. It's quite exciting. It seems to me that whatever's happening out there seems to be accelerating in pace as we start gathering closer and closer to more times ahead of us that probably have a lot of stress to do in our future, and a lot of a testing for the courage of mankind, I should say.
You know, tonight we're going to talk about reptoids, and I'd like you to explain how you got involved in this kind of research.
Many years ago, I started hearing through the grapevine. I went to one or two of these local meetings where people were talking about aliens and such, and I thought it was a very entertaining thing to do, which it is, and it's very much a journey once you get into it. But when I first arrived, I started hearing one or two scattered reports that departed from the average description of what these alien beings look like. What I was hearing is that they are encountering beings who are very large in stature, 7 to 7.5 feet tall, sometimes much smaller, all the way down to 4 feet tall, and they are upright, humanoid-looking, although they've maintained certain parts of their outer characteristics that are very reptilian, such as scales or beaded skin, vertical slit pupils, lipless mouths, no ear canals, not a hair on the body, and a exterior that's much ranging in description from that of a linebacker weighing upwards of 350 pounds to more diminutive, wily looking, sleek creatures or beings that kind of like mix in the physical descriptions. There seems to be so many variations upon the theme that it makes narrowing down what exactly is a reptoid or reptilian kind of difficult. It's kind of like looking at human beings. You have all these various forms of us, sizes, weights, skin colors, eye colors and such, that you can't quite categorize it as one thing.
There was a report this week, John, that the humpback whale has a brain that almost echoes humans, which tells me that it must have or it has the capability of developing extreme intelligence. When you think of a reptoid, I think of a snake, I think of an alligator, a crocodile, you know, with their small little egg-shaped brains like a dinosaur almost. However, if they do exist on other planets and their brains are the size of human beings, then it's entirely possible that they have amassed superior intelligence, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely, that's correct. But also we can't dismiss the fact that there were dinosaurs such as Troodon that Dr. Dale Russell had used as a model to define whether or not intelligence could be reached and what the advanced dinosaur form would look like if allowed to be developed. And under NASA contract, he actually came up with a model that was most frighteningly similar to what people have not only described in historical accounts, but also in today's current current trends of the UFO community and the reports that are coming in. So the idea of having an intelligent reptile on Earth is not so much a great departure as one would think. Truodon, Dr. Russell found out, it was actually headed in a convergent path with human upright position and larger brain mass. It had the largest brain mass out of all the dinosaurs. And this model has actually even been quoted in questions regarding extraterrestrial presence in our solar system, or in beyond our solar system, by the fellow colloquium in Los Alamos Laboratories, in which Frank Drake actually quoted some of Dale Russell's models. So this model is being used by the highest of science and government groups that are considering the question of whether or not there's evolved intelligent life forms living side by side with humans, or at least visiting them.
Explain to us what you believe the reptoids are.
I believe they are both byproducts of Earth's terrestrial evolution. Somewhere in the ancient past, a group of them may have been split away from the main populations on the surface. And when the catastrophic conditions of many millions of years ago occurred with the impact off of the Yucatan, a lot of those dinosaurs were pressed out of existence by various types of related disasters that were triggered by the initial impact. And the ones that scientists have said that were probably the last ones on Earth to live are the ones in Antarctica, because down there they had already been preconditioned for living in cold and freezing climates. And the dinosaurs that did down there actually developed. Tom Rich out of Australia, a paleontologist, discovered fossils in the cliffs along the southern coast of Australia, in which he said, look at the impressions of the back of the brain area here when you look in the inside of the skull. He said, these orbits are enlarged because this is the optical processing area of this dinosaur. In other words, the dinosaur could see in almost total darkness. So you're talking about a group of dinosaurs that may have actually been able to split off into the underworld, lived on microorganisms or funguses, adapted technologies or ways of surviving and developing genetically or evolutionarily just like human beings did. It wasn't, 200,000 years ago, look what we look like.
True, true. So you believe the reptoids are more earthbound than coming from some other planetary system?
I think by now they have probably left our planet system, have gone out to explore space, and rumor is that the ones who went off to explore space many thousands or how many, maybe a million years ago, who knows, are actually going to be coming back in 2012 is the point of return.
Now that could be a very fascinating moment.
We reached the galactic plane at that time, and along the galactic plane, scientists have discovered even a dark line in space in which they've seen the birth of stars. They have named this dark line that's directly in the center of the galaxy or in the galactic plane, the Snake. So as we traverse the galactic plane, we're entering within the plane of that formation, and we also cross between the year of the dragon to the year of the serpent in Chinese mythology.
John, the very strange statues in Egypt that, you know, half bird, half man, half reptile, half man, might they be the reptoids too?
They very well could be. However, we have to remember that since the dawn of human evolution, the form of entertainment that people had back then was a matter of looking into their dreams, and they explored awakened dreams, the use of different types of hallucinogens. Repetitively throughout the world of the shaman and different cultural priesthoods, when substances like that are taken, there seems to be an abundance of images regarding reptiles come into their hallucinations or their visions. And the feelings they derive from these contacts, and I say contacts because even the late, he skips my mind, he was talking about drug use and he died in Hawaii.
Thomas,
help me out here, somebody in the audience. Yes. Terrence McKenna. Right, communicated with me at one time, and he said that the most highly impacting vision he ever had was something that was half man and half snake. And he said he didn't know where it came from. He thought and considered my postulations, but really couldn't say anything for himself other than it was life-changing for him.
Some of these theories, though, John, echo David Icke's with regards to reptilians, don't they?
Well, you have to wonder where David Icke got them. A lot of this discussion was on the scene before David Icke decided to start producing here in the United States and coming over from England with his ideas of conspiracies. And so this is during a period in which I dropped out of the UFO scene because, you know, you get to a point of saturation where you think nobody wants to know. I was coming along saying, look, there's something different coming on the scene here, and it's Earth-derived instead of space-derived, and maybe we're looking in the wrong direction. And even as open-minded as we are in the UFO community, we still fall within the parameters of our scope of vision, and that just wasn't there at the time. And I backed off, and the information started to blossom and grow. It turned into a very negative thing, although I feel that there's negative and positive in everything. And if you want to talk about reptoids, we can talk about really, really, really evil ones. Can you imagine a military reptoid being able to run 48 miles an hour? That was clocked speed. No, 38 miles an hour was clocked speed by a gentleman back in Bishopville, South Carolina in 1988 when he was a full bird colonel about to be promoted to full general in the Army. And he had reported to the sheriff to Liston Truesdale down there, that driving along that swamp with his wife beside him coming back from a wedding rehearsal, and Baptists don't drink, so he wasn't drinking, he clocked a half-man, half-dinosaur guy running alongside his car at 38 miles an hour. Now, can you imagine our troops facing something like that on the battlefield? So, in other words, we're talking about something that could be very, very frightening to have to deal with, but at the same time, we haven't met their women. We haven't met the females. I mean, we haven't met their children. There must be artists. There must be a whole culture behind them. We can't judge the actions by the ones who are interacting with us right now on their whole and project that on their whole culture.
Whereabouts within the planet are they? Deep below?
They're in various places all across the planet, mostly in geologically remote areas that are beyond our scope of exploration. There are large cavern and tunnel systems that are throughout the whole world. The jewels of the planet, the jewels of all the historical things we're looking for and all the answers to aliens, if we just turn the UFO thing upside down on its back and look at it from a different perspective, in other words, focus on where their visitor bases are here, where their ports of entry are, what kind of policing they have to make sure that no rogue groups come down and interact with us when they're not supposed to. Who are the mercenaries coming to our planet trying to steal our technologies or other beings' technologies? These are they're all over the place in deep cavern systems that some of them are linked to sensitive laboratories that I believe that our government is operating. And at the same time, they may be just living in pocket cultures deep underground. Their civilization may have been told that there's a vacuum to space. Don't go up there, and if you do, there's monsters there that will kill you. And they're mammal monsters that kind of look like us, but they will kill you before they will talk to you.
You know,
so we must think, the whole thing must be upside down, perhaps. And if we can direct our attention to where it's more, we can see in our backyard. We have to depend on these scientists to tell us what they find out in space, but every single person out there listening to me right now can actually do something by reading in the armchair your research and then getting out and going out and doing it. Because once you start looking into the phenomenon is very John Keelish. It will look back at you.
Since you brought up the military, did the United States order the Navy, especially all ships, September 11, 2002, to do something? What happened?
In honor of the dead of September 11, 2001, the United States military, the United States Navy, was ordered to start raising the first Navy Jack. The first Navy Jack is the very famous flag in which you see 13 red and white horizontal stripes, and across it you'll see a picture of a rattlesnake and the words, "Don't tread on me." this is very much a part of American history. The first, the Commodore Esop Hawkins, who was the Commodore of the first American Navy, actually readied his fleet in the Potomac and used the flag as a signal to the whole fleet to engage the enemy. This is what our government has decided to use as its traditional standard in the war against terrorism. And in today's times, when everybody starts talking about they believe in Armageddon, such as the leader of different various Middle East states who believe that in their heart, when you have the President of the United States who himself must feel something towards Armageddon because he declares himself to be such a great Christian in these days, when you have these people who think that we are in those times and these signs start coming up, you wonder, are they trying to force prophecy? Because really we're looking at, when the snake is on a flag on U.S. naval ships, we're thinking about the Leviathan, as it is in the traditional text of the Bible. Because if you read those texts, and I haven't got the points right now, but everybody out there can, you know, they'll find them. When it talks about the Leviathan, it talks about something that sounds more metallic and more like a machine than it does a biological animal. So are we really living in some sort of convergence of this kind of like subconscious matrix of all life on Earth, and all these symbols that we've predicted to come true, we're actually pulling them together? Because the only way for a good world tomorrow is to have the end of this world today.
These reptoids, what do they eat?
Difficult to say.
Don't tell me us.
Well, it was once, I don't know if I mentioned this before, but it was once written on a billboard out in Los Angeles for weight loss and going to the gym that it said, and there was so much of a public demand and outrage, they took the signs down, but it had a sign up and it says, when aliens arrive, they'll eat the fat ones first. So, you know, we don't want to think that they have a choice for us, you know, how big we are or anything, but I think we're dealing with animals or beings that are both carnivorous and herbivores, probably just like ourselves. There may be different types of proteins and different types of things that their systems require that we've more or less adapted to on the surface. And there may be delicacies that they enjoy that we would not otherwise find appetizing, just as we would in different parts of the world where they eat all kinds of things, that at least anything that has a heartbeat sometimes. So... we haven't had any reports of anybody being bitten by a reptoid. We have never had a report of anybody being half-eaten by a reptoid. So I don't think we have to worry too much about that. Although you will hear in some of the conspiracy rings that, oh, so many children of the year die and this, that, and the other. We can't blame it just on the reptoids. So I don't know. The diet is yet to be determined, but you're right. I hope that to serve humanity isn't the cookbook. To quote
What about mutilating animals, John?
Mutilating animals, I think, is a fascinating subject. I'm not so much in the hows it's being done, although that's very fascinating, and I want to get to the bottom of it. But really, my search in the subject matter of the mutilations is, what are the messages they're trying to tell us? It may not be as black and white as trying to figure it out. It's like you have 10 people standing around a stone that weighs 50 tons and it's so many feet high and so many feet wide, and they're going, look how the rock was cut. Isn't it beautiful? I wonder who did this and this, that, and the other. When if you step far enough back, you'll see it's only one stone of many that make up a design or a word. You can't see it until you step back from it. And I think that there's more of an underlying message in the way they're putting the bodies and the way they want them to be seen. Some of the scenes have been staged. So really, what is the psychological aim of what's being done? The medical is beyond my reach as a person, many people out there. However, the psychological, we've all dealt with game players. Maybe we can just figure these out too.
Hey, John, we are going to bring in Sheriff Tom Kuka in just a moment. He is a sheriff in Montana, and he's got an incredible story to tell. And our special guest tonight, John Rhodes, we're going to bring in Sheriff Tom Kuka from Montana in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Get ready. And welcome back. We're with John Rhodes. John, tell us a little bit about Sheriff Tom Kuka, if you would.
Sheriff Tom Kuka is a very rare breed of man. He's a sheriff up in Pend'Oreille County, Montana. Pend'Oreille County covers about 33,300 square miles. It's known as the Golden Triangle area because there's a whole bunch of wheat, barleys, and grasses there that give us this beautiful golden hue. You've got the Rocky Mountain Western Front around the edge of it, and it's just some of the most scenic, beautiful country in America. In that area, he got a call from a childhood friend of his that had informed him that there was a cattle mutilation on his ranch. And he responded to the scene, and I'm going to let him pick up that story. But the thing here is that we went there together. We looked at the evidence, obtained samples and stuff. The entire mutilation case is being documented for a DVD. And Sheriff Kuka is really reaching out to the public at this time and, you know, trying to let you know that there is a sense of concern amongst the law enforcement officials that we finally get to the bottom of this. He represents many law enforcement officials that wouldn't have the courage to come out to the public and actually start letting them know right from the front lines exactly what's going on.
Very good. Sheriff, welcome to the program. How are you, sir?
Good. Thank you very much.
Good. Are you the same sheriff that brought in Linda Moulton Howe for help in an investigation? Because she was just talking about a case up in your neck of the woods.
Yes, we did. What happened, we called her for some information, and it just kind of progressed into the fact that she came here.
Well, she is. She's the best, so I'm glad you had her out there as well, and I'm glad, John, that you've brought the sheriff with us. Sheriff, tell us a little bit about this episode here that that occurred in your county.
Okay, well, first we can tell this is about the 21st one, say, in the last six, 7 years, somewhere in there. They're all so relatively close to the same thing. There always seems to be part of the face, one side or the other, usually the left side that's cut off, and I mean with exact precision. There isn't any muscle or meat left on that bone. That jawbone is clean right down to the bone. There's usually no udder left that has been cut out without damaging any tissues underneath it. And the rectal area, of course, is cored out also.
And that you have seen no evidence of footprints or some means or way that somebody or somebody's got into this pasture and area to take these animals?
No, we have not. And that's the part that I guess frustrating to us is we would like to have some kind of evidence and some place to go to, but we just keep coming up against the same thing.
You've seen a lot of crime scenes before.
Oh,
you're able to pinpoint much information about various crimes. In this particular case, are you baffled?
To a certain extent, yes. I would, you know, getting to talk to people like John sure helps out, makes us realize, you know, we're not alone in this situation. There's a lot of other people out there that are going through the same thing. And hopefully, with the public getting involved with it, maybe we can get some more information out there, somebody that actually sees something or knows what's going on and
get, now this
find something positive out.
This was the case, Sheriff, where the animal was dropped and left an indentation in the ground, if memory serves me?
Yes. I guess, there was some indents in the ground there. We had two different spots where there was indentations in the ground, but they weren't like anything, footprints or anything.
No.
Like that. They were very symmetrical marks. And there's also a impression mark in the stubble where you could see what appeared to be that cow that hit and then came to rest about 7 feet north of that impression mark.
Any idea how high up a cow would have to be to make that kind of an impression if it were dropped?
No, I don't have a clue. And I'm not sure what force it would take to lift that. This is probably, you know, a 1,200, 1,300-pound animal. I know it's going to take some force to get it up, and once it comes down, it's going to be moving right along, that's for sure.
Sheriff Cooker, were there any eyewitnesses to this? Did anyone see strange lights, a craft in the air, anything like that, or some predator running from the scene?
No, there wasn't anything quite like that. First of all, this one was a little bit different than some of the other cases we worked or similar cases to this, in the fact that these cattle were moved in there one afternoon, and the next morning, the neighbor saw this cow laying there dead. However, they didn't notify the Petersons that this animal was dead. So it took another day and a half before they located it, which was somewhat unfortunate. It would have been nice for us to get there right away. But there just wasn't time for anything such as predators, or at least the small predator that would have taken, you know, to do the damage to this cow. As you might know, with us bringing forward all this information, we've gotten a lot of calls. And there's a lot of people that want to offer different opinions as to what happened. But I just don't believe there was small rodents that were eating these or making these incisions in this animal. I just can't believe that they didn't have time to get it done.
A lot of my friends. Go ahead, Sean.
If I may interject here, I spoke this evening with Bob Hames, who is a former city councilman in the area. Bob was the gentleman, the rancher neighbor of the Petersons, that actually helped me sever the head off and contain it for examination and ice and get it frozen as soon as possible. He told me this evening that even after the head was excised and that bare meat was laid fresh open for anybody or anything to see, 3 days later he went back to the scene, and even though there's a free steak sitting there, bloody red almost, not one predator bit into it at all.
That's correct.
If you can imagine that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a free meal sitting there, just juicy, waiting to be bitten into, and they say no.
They didn't want any part of it, did they?
No part of it.
Now, the night that we did respond to this, there was a coyote within a quarter of a mile of this carcass, and he didn't come into it either. And he was seen there the next day within a quarter of a mile and still wouldn't go over to it.
He probably said, Sheriff, I'm as close as I'm going to get. I've got a lot of friends in law enforcement in St. Louis and in Los Angeles. A lot of the times they will tell me that they work on gut instinct on certain cases. What does your gut, Sheriff, tell you about this thing?
You know, we're working with some kind of technology here that nobody else has seen around this area, probably maybe nowhere. To be able to go in there, remove this one animal, and it has to be taken someplace and processed, the work that was being done to it, and then brought back and not being detected. It tells me that we're talking to somebody that, you know, not your average Joe Blow criminal. This individual definitely has this planned. He knows exactly what he's doing, and he has some fantastic equipment to get it done.
John Rhodes, to bring an animal back after doing what's being done, to me, illustrates that they want us to see it, and they're basically trying to send us a message. What's your take?
Right. I mean, that seems to me to be the case. You know, I didn't bring it to, Tom, I didn't bring this to your attention, but I was recognizing today that, in fact, there's been October 9th of 1975 in Judith Basin County, Utica, there was a undersheriff by the name of Jerry Skelton. He had a bull calf that was found dead, and its testicles and cords removed. Only around the carcass, there was a pile of stones, and somebody had taken the stones and placed them around as if they were putting something on display. The next morning, the cow was discovered after some rain and dew had hit it and some light snow, and it had a petroleum distillate cobweb that had formed over the animal. Now, the thing that's important there is the date, October 9th, 1975, and then you have the stones piled up, meaning they were trying to send a message. It's not a matter of, you know, how the stones were put there. It's a matter of what are they trying to say with them. Now, this mutilation also occurred October 9th, 2006. That's exactly 31 years later to the day. Now, in this case, the cow was deposited in the area that was 500-plus acres in which it could have been deposited, like out in the coulee where nobody would see it for a few days. But instead, it's deposited only 18 feet from a fence, which is 36 feet from a road, which is only less than a mile from a government NORAD nuclear missile silo. So there's a thing here where they're trying to put something on display, and I think there's an underlying message here that we should be focusing on. It's trying to do the psychological profile of a killer, right, Sheriff?
Exactly.
Right.
And this isn't the first one that we've had that's like that also. They're not hard to get to. They're not hard to see once, people get there to look. It's just we have so much ground out here to try and cover. Sometimes it takes several days before you'll find it.
Sheriff, what is some of you? I'm sorry, John, go ahead.
I was going to say, in addition to that, the thing that makes it difficult is the square miles having to be covered over such a large area with such a light population. But also, when evidence does come to hand, the sheriff's departments are really not prepared economically to start paying for a lot of scientific testing. So there is evidence at hand, even that I have, where if there was money coming in from somewhere that could pay for the testing, that would be greatly appreciated. That's one of the reasons I'm putting the DVD together, and 20% of the net proceeds from the DVD called Whatever Happened to Cow Number 62, because this was cow number 62 of 200. That money will go towards the Pend'Oreille County Sheriff's Department for buying equipment such as forensic lab testing stuff, anything that could help in their field testing, cameras, anything that they might need to do the job. And I think we as the public, when you have a person such as Tom Kuka here coming out to address this and give it such high profile and support from authorities, that we really need to send something back in his direction. Because if he can't get help, maybe we can do it. Maybe we can give him the help that he needs and that county.
Sheriff, what are your constituents out there saying about all this?
Well, they're probably the same thing, frustrated like me. They want to be able to help the people that they work for, want to be able to tell them, hey, we're going to do our best to get to the bottom of this and stop it. This whole economy around here is based on agriculture, and cattle is a large portion of that. And that's for a young couple that's out there working, one of these producing cows is a big loss to them.
Are they scared? Are people scared out there?
I don't think I've really caught it that. Oh, a couple people have mentioned, that just makes them feel odd, which when you go to this scene and you know that something or somebody had been there and done this to this animal, it's a, strange feeling. It's like, I don't know exactly how to explain it, but because I guess we don't know, we're working with the unknown so much here that we can't explain it, and that's maybe the part that's so hard to accept.
Do you agree with that, John?
I very much do, and it takes a lot of man hours to try and even think this thing together and try and put together the clues. And law enforcement stretched thin as it is anyway because of budgets in certain areas and such. And I think that what we have here is elusive prey, one that is not impossible to catch. Because you know what? You put somebody like Tom Kuka or the support that he's got behind him, or Razzle Rathbone together with like Sherlock Holmes, eventually somebody's going to slip up. And I have a feeling it's going to be soon, because Sheriff Tom Kuka is hot on their trails. And now, if I can, Sheriff Kuka, there's been a misunderstanding of some sort of miscommunication in regards to my severing the cow's head and taking it for examination. It has been said that I took it without permission. Can you clear this up? Because you were standing there when everybody
was talking. Is that an issue? Okay.
Yeah, it is an issue because it's been said about what I've done.
Yes. We were there with John at the site, both myself and the rancher, and we got done with our interview and discussing the case, and he asked if he could have samples of this cow, and we said absolutely, and we're all done. We've taken our samples. In fact, that's part of the problem with part of the tissue samples that we took. We had no place to go with them, so we said, I got nothing to do with them, so absolutely take what you need. And then when we came back, the head was gone, and we said, holy cow, the head's gone. it wasn't an issue, and it actually, it was quite interesting for a couple of different reasons. It was good that they did take it off. So, yes, it was simply a misunderstanding, and there was never, ever any problems with John removing that head. And
okay, well, I appreciate that, Tom, because it's important to be able to get out to that field and feel free that you leave room for other people, but at the same time you preserve the evidence before it decays.
I'm not trying to, you know, like I said, I've had just so many people that have called and talked about this, and I try to take time to listen to all of them. Anything that anybody can tell me, you know, especially like you, when you get the forensic work done on this head, maybe, you know, we'll learn something from it that'll help us go and channel all our efforts into one area, or, you know.
Right. Right, and it does take a team effort, and exactly. Law enforcement shouldn't be by themselves anymore. That's why we, the people who really find this entertaining and fascinating, we're learning so much about our environment and what's going on, we really need to support the people that are on the front lines. And I really do appreciate you being able to come out, Tom, and talk about it. It takes courage, and I know that you're hot on the trail.
Well, we're going to do the best we can here, but, you know, community like ours, it takes a lot of community policing to get all this work done. If we don't get calls from the public, there's going to be a lot of things that are going to happen we will not get to. We have to respond to a lot of stuff. And this is going to be no exception to that. We just need help with the public. Anything that they see or hear, which has always been lacking in all of this, we've had a couple of these in the past. I just found out about one the other day from 2001, where after we had done the investigation, we had a lady that had been driving by there and said she saw some lights out in the field at the time that we thought that a mutilation had occurred. But other than that, nobody's seen anything or heard anything during these. And, of course, that's part of the problem with being in a sparsely populated area. There's just not enough people to cover all the ground.
Can you rule out, Sheriff, a cult or poachers?
Yes. Poachers, for instance, would be, if they were doing it, I think they would be doing it for a reason, such
they
as
they take the whole animal.
Taking the meat for something to eat or to sell for profit. We don't have a problem with cults here. I don't think we ever have. However, I've heard of them and the things that they do. We would be having other issues with those people other than just, you know, mutilating animals. And the way that they go about their mutilation, I talked to a gentleman about this once, and he won't even call these mutilations. He says, whoever's doing this knows exactly what they're doing, and it's very precise. He says, mutilation does not represent what is happening to these animals.
Well, I got to tell you, Sheriff, this is as bizarre as it comes, isn't it?
It is for me. I just haven't seen anything like this before. And that's one of the other things that I wanted to mention. John is probably the first one to tell you he's not surgically inclined, and they had just a little bit of trouble removing that head. If you could see the damage they did to the tissue underneath that skin compared to the cuts that were done to that animal prior to that, from this mutilation, then there would be no doubt in anybody's mind, you know.
And Bob Hames, who helped me, he's a skilled dresser. He's dressed field game many years in his life, a real hunter. So he knew exactly what he was doing with that knife.
Exactly, yeah. And he still, there was a lot of damage to that tissue underneath. And had you not done that, you know, that would been never seen for comparison. So that was, you know, something very, I guess, worthwhile about removing that head that came out of it.
Sheriff, thank you.
Experience.
I appreciate you, Sheriff, being on the program. John, you stay with us for the rest of the 2 hours.
Okay, very good.
And I'll be back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. More to talk about now. These reptoids, are they mutilating these animals?